Head to netsuite.com/briefing now for their one-of-a-kind flexible financing program.
Hey, everyone. I'm David Chalian, CNN's political director, and welcome to the CNN Political Briefing. As we all know by now, this year's election is a rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. But of course, they're not the only candidates. That's an ad that played during the Super Bowl for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's running for president as an independent. Earlier this week, he announced his pick for vice president, Silicon Valley attorney and entrepreneur Nicole Shanahan.
I wanted someone who would honor the traditions of our nation as a nation of immigrants, but who also understands that to be a nation, we need secure borders.
Kennedy is presenting himself as an alternative to Trump and Biden as voters express growing dissatisfaction with their options. He is against vaccine mandates, as well as the influence of money on decisions made by the government, and he's never held public office before. The vice presidential announcement was a crucial step in his bid to get on ballots nationwide. He currently only qualifies in the state of Utah. So today, we're talking about Kennedy's campaign and the influence of third parties in American politics. Lee Drutman is a senior fellow in the political reform program at New American and has written a book called Breaking the Two-Party Doom Loop, The Case for Multi-Party Democracy in America. He also co-hosts the podcast Politics in Question. Lee, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be with you, David.
So one of the things about third-party candidacies over time that I have discovered through polling and covering elections for the last couple decades is that they tend to fade as the year progresses and the dominance of the two-party system sort of takes hold. And I'm wondering if you concur that that is what we have seen, with some exceptions, and if that means we should anticipate that again this time around.
Well, certainly that has been the pattern, that third-party candidates tend to lose steam as the election nears and it becomes clear that it's a choice between the Democrat and the Republican, and that a vote for a third party is either a wasted vote or a spoiled vote. So voters tend to come home to the parties that they traditionally support, and the historical pattern is indeed that third-party support does fade as we get closer to November. Now, is this year going to be different? That is the big question.
I ask myself that every 4 years.
So here's what is different about this year at this point. One is that you have two extremely unpopular and extremely well-known frontrunners who will probably get the nomination. They've clinched the nomination. They will probably get the nomination at the conventions. And we're talking about, of course, Biden and Trump. And it's really unusual for two candidates with this level of unfavorability to go head to head. 2016, you had similar, Trump and Clinton, both unpopular. But what's also distinct is just how many people are really just fed up with the two-party system. You know, you see poll after poll, 63% of Americans say it's time for a third party. That's Gallup's poll. That's a record high. Pew's been tracking the share of Americans who don't like either party. That's hit a record high at 27%. It's about the same number of the people who disapprove of both Trump and Biden. It's consistent with what we're now calling the double haters, people who hate both Trump and Biden. So there is a growing share of the electorate that just says, I hate both of these parties. And there is a level of distrust with the political system. Gallup polling, again, the combined trust in institutions, average across a bunch of institutions, down to 26%. That's a record low. And RFK Jr. is really tapping a lot of this anti-system distrust in a way that I think is really seeming to resonate in this particular moment.
The reality is, though, it is the system. It is the system in which this election is going to take place. And so I take your point, obviously, that there is this large swath of the American public that feels unfavorably towards both these candidates, that is yearning for something other than these choices. And yet this is the system that we have. And so structurally, obviously, one of the challenges for any third party candidate is to get on the ballot. Now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. right now, the only state in which he is officially declared to have been on the ballot is Utah. His campaign and his super PAC have each claimed they've gathered enough signatures to get him on the ballot in a slew of states, including some battleground states like Michigan and Arizona and Georgia. And now we've had reporting that he's also sort of flirting with the Libertarian Party, perhaps in a way to get access to all of these ballots. Does it matter whether he signs up with a party like the Libertarian Party, or is it better? Have candidates had more success riding the sort of independent label?
Well, there's a very small number of candidates who have had any success as a third party candidate.
And of course, success can be defined lots of ways. Ross Perot got 19% of the vote, zero electoral votes, but yeah.
Right. And he initially ran as an independent, and then he formed the Reform Party and ran as a Reform Party candidate and did worse. But, you know, it's not about what line or what label you run on as a third party presidential challenger. It's about whether you are tapping some issue or some slice of the electorate that doesn't care whether a Democrat or a Republican wins.
Kennedy, you believe, is tapping into this distrust of the overall system. Do you see that as the thrust of the campaign, the thrust of his message that he's selling to Americans? What else do you see him putting forth that speaks to a potential breakthrough moment here as an independent candidate?
Well, I think it's not the message in isolation, it's the message in the moment, right? The moment is Americans are looking around saying, we have two really old white men who are really unpopular. Is this the best we can do? And along comes Kennedy, who says, the system is rigged. It's big government in bed with big corporations, and they're lying to you. And look no further than what your other choices are. And it seems like that message is really resonating with a lot of people who want something different. And his platforms and policies are sort of this interesting heterodox populism tinged with new wavy, tinged with conspiracism, tinged with a bunch of other stuff. And the coalition that he's bringing together is sort of an odd coalition of disaffecteds and outsiders and Silicon Valley money and crypto money. So it's like all the people who have sort of been somehow kind of left behind in the current two-party system or feel that they have been are sort of gathering around this campaign.
Now, I know that every time I speak to a third-party candidate, and this notion of the question that gets posed to them is, aren't you really just nothing more than a spoiler to the two major party candidates here? And you're just going to be a spoiler in the election. And of course, every third party candidate resists that, pushes back on that, rejects that label. But you've studied this a long time. How are they anything but spoilers in the sense that it is more likely than not that one of the two major party nominees is going to be the next president of the United States? So in a close election, do they not have the ability, these third party candidates in the right states, to, quote unquote, spoil it for one side or the other?
Every president has been a Democrat or a Republican for over 160 years. Few who have, you know, gotten a little close. I think the high water mark was 1912, when Teddy Roosevelt ran as a bull moose progressive when he didn't get the Republican nomination. But that's the reality, is that it's very hard for a third party presidential candidate to break through. So probably, assuming nothing dramatic changes in the race, Kennedy will get a share of votes that is greater than the difference between the Trump and Biden spread in a handful of swing states. Probably not going to win any states, although maybe he could win Alaska, which has an extremely high number of independents and was also Perot's best state that he almost won in 92. But in a close election, Even if he gets 6% or 4%, that could make the difference in all of these key racer's edge states that we're going to be spending the rest of the year obsessively watching.
And do you think, in what you've observed so far, that you could assess or definitively state he's pulling voters more from Trump than Biden or more from Biden than Trump? It seems pretty, if not equal, pretty close to me. He's drawing from both sides.
Yeah, I think he is. And I think he's also drawing a type of voter who's not super engaged. So I think that's part of what makes it hard to know where he's polling. I think it kind of makes it hard to poll exactly, because these are probably voters who are the least likely to respond to pollsters and are sort of hard to know how to weight exactly.
Also, I think there, as you noted earlier, there are voters on both sides of the aisle of the political equation in America who have that sense of disengagement, left behind, what you've been describing as sort of the pool of voters from which he is pulling. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to have a lot more on Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s bid and the overall third-party conundrum for the major two parties. We'll be back with Lee Drutman in just a moment.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life,
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We're here with Lee Drutman, author of Breaking the Two-Party Doom Loop, The Case for Multi-Party Democracy in America. What lessons do you think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can learn from a Ross Perot? I say Ross Perot because to me, it's the most recent example of a somewhat successful third-party candidate.
Well, I think that successful, and by successful, we mean relevant in the election, what they all have shared is that they've really highlighted an issue or kind of almost a mood that neither of the two parties is really capturing. They've targeted a specific demographic of voters who, when they go to the ballot box, they say, oh, Democrat, meh, Republican, meh, I don't know, doesn't matter, so maybe we need a third party candidate. So those two things, having some issue or mood that neither of the two major parties are capturing and appealing to a group of voters who could care less whether a Democrat or a Republican wins because they think they're both equally rotten, that has historically marked relatively successful third party candidacies. Ross Perot being an example, go back to George Wallace, who captured the hell no, we won't let black people into our schools voters in the South. Strom Thurmond, 1948, who captured the hell no, we won't let black people into the military voters in the South. 1924, Robert La Follette, who's capturing the last strains of progressivism, although in some ways presaging the New Deal. All these candidates, they captured some part of the electorate that felt that the two major parties had abandoned them, and they had an issue that voters mobilized around.
It makes me think, just listening to you, I wonder what we will look back on and suggest that this Kennedy bid sort of previewed for the country. I know in your book, you refer to the two-party system as a doom loop, and I understand, I think it's fair to describe you not a fan of the two-party system, but make your best case, I guess, for why America should move to a different kind of system in your mind, and if you think that's actually feasible.
Well, I think that we have this two-party system that doesn't match the diversity of a very large country, leaves a lot of people feeling unrepresented, as the poll after poll shows. And most importantly, it's creating this binary hyper-partisanship that is driving us to really view our fellow citizens not as fellow citizens, but as enemies. I mean, you look at the political rhetoric of how Democrats and Republicans talk about each other. You look at the increasing threats of political violence. You look at the refusal to cooperate across party lines. These are fundamental downstream problems of a political system that gives us the same two choices and gives us the same conflict over and over again. And it is really driving us crazy, driving us apart, and driving a hole in the foundation of our democracy, which depends on the shared legitimacy of elections and an understanding that democracy is a system in which parties can lose elections.
Well, let me just pause you there, Lee, for 1 second, though, because in today's election of Biden versus Trump, the reliance and the belief in the legitimacy of the elections is not something that both candidates reject. Only one candidate rejects that. So is that a flaw of the two-party system, or is that a flaw of Donald Trump?
Well, it's a flaw of Donald Trump. But the reason that Donald Trump and the Republican Party can get away with this is because is a large portion of this country, roughly 40-45%, who, if Democrats won, it would be the end of America, so we need to do whatever we can to prevent Democrats from winning. And, you know, frankly, I'll admit that I'm a Democrat. I worry that the Democrats' message of, you know, if we don't win, it's the end of democracy, means that actually maybe we don't really have a democracy anymore, because democracy is a system in which parties can lose elections. And this is true that in a two-party system, when one party goes rotten and authoritarian and illiberal, which I think one of our two parties has, that really undermines the ability of the system to function, because you need two healthy parties. And you know, if we had more parties, we would have an opportunity to see a center-right party that could emerge and could sort of forge a pro-democracy broad coalition, which I think exists in the electorate. But lacking that, a lot of voters are faced with this binary choice, either the authoritarian Republican or, you know, feckless Democrats or woke Democrats or, you know, third party anti-system candidate who wants to blow everything up, and it's not clear how you would actually govern.
So when you look around the world and you see systems of proportional representation and not a two-party dominant system, do you not see an increase in vitriol, political violence, divisions in society? Is that not existing in those countries that have that form of government?
So I think it certainly varies across countries. But when I look particularly at a country like Germany, where, yes, there is a far-right party, the AfD, that party is really tapped out at about 20%, sometimes gets a little more, but it hasn't been in government yet. All the other parties will probably not form a coalition with it. You know, I look at the Netherlands, where a far-right party got 27% in the most recent election, and no other party would form a government with this party. And so eventually, the leader of the party had to say, you know what, I can't get any party to have a coalition with me, so I'm out. So that's the difference, is that, sure, there are right-wing parties, authoritarian parties, anti-immigrant parties, but they tap out at about 25%, which is not enough to govern a country. It's only in the U.S. where a authoritarian faction can gain control of one of the two major parties, and then it has a chance, you know, at actually having unified control over the government in Washington. And that's the real threat. The other thing when you talk about vitriol is, actually, there have been a growing number of studies here that look at out-party hatreds across democracies. And the consistent finding is that out-party hatreds, what political scientists call affective polarization, is much lower in multi-party countries. Because you know what? Parties go into coalition with other parties, and then there's sort of this lasting sense of, oh, they're kind of on our side. They're not our enemy. It's when we have the same conflict over and over and over again, as we do in our currently hyper-partisan, polarized two-party system, that we have these problems. And I would argue, and I do in the book, that actually we used to have something like a four-party system here in the U.S. with liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats alongside liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans. And that actually worked decently well. It's only when our politics have become so nationalized and sectarianized and geographically sorted that we've had this really, truly binary, hyperpartisan system in which we've gone from bipartisanship and cross-coalitional work being a virtue to being a vice and something to be punished.
Lee, my final question for you, do you see any end to the two-party system in the United States?
Well, things that can't go on forever don't go on forever. And I see growing interest among many people engaged in political reform, even people sitting in the U.S. Congress, for structural change. I think there's really growing interest in moving our electoral system to a system of proportional representation with multi-member districts that solves the gerrymandering problem. It gives voters representation everywhere, and it better allows the voters to choose a diversity of parties. It will engage more voters. No sitting member of Congress says, oh, gee, this system's working really well. They're fleeing for the exits. So my sense is that there is a growing interest in structural change, even among those people who hold the power. And it's totally constitutional. The U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 4 of the Elections Clause gives Congress control, and Congress would have to pass a law that eliminates the prohibition on multi-member districts, which was put in place for good reason during the Civil Rights era, and rather support states moving to multi-member proportional districts to elect multiple parties. But that's the place to start, not at the presidential level, which is very hard for a third party, but rather at the legislative level, at the House level and state legislatures. And there's a real opportunity to expand the options and improve the representation and break the two-party doom loop.
Lee, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's edition of the CNN Political Briefing. And we want to hear from you. Is there a question you'd like answered about this election cycle? Is there a guest you really want to hear from? Give us a call at 301-842-8338 or send us an email at cnnpoliticalbriefing@gmail.com. And you might just be featured on a future episode of the podcast, so don't forget to tell us your name, where you're from, how we can reach you, and if you give us permission to use the recording on the podcast. CNN Political Briefing is a production of CNN Audio. This episode was produced by Madeline Thompson. Our senior producer is Haley Thomas. Dan DeZula is our technical director, and Steve Lichtai is executive producer of CNN Audio. Support from Alex Manisseri, Robert Mathers, John Dianora, Lainey Steinhardt, Jamis Andrist, Nicole Pesaru, and Lisa Namero. And special thanks to Katie Hinman. We'll be back with a new episode on Friday, April 5th. Thanks so much for listening.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/briefing. netsuite.com/briefing.